This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of July 20th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It was a really fun week of baseball. I mean, just everything you could ask for.
Any week of baseball is going to be a fun week of baseball.
There are weeks with so many moments that stand out, and there are weeks with fewer moments that stand out. So,
yes. And speaking of standing out, I was standing out on the train this morning
because wet
with sweat after trying to run. And how's my hamstring, you ask?
Well, you were able to move, so I guess you weren't hobbled completely.
Yeah, it was a hamstring strain. Okay. And usually you get a warning, and I got no warning, and all of a sudden I got pain, and I slowed down, stretched a little bit, and started again, and I'm like, nope, got to formulate a plan to get to a train station and get home, which is what I did. And standing out, I was sweating like a pig on the train.
Outstanding.
It was beautiful.
There's John outstanding in his field or on the platform.
So, yeah, 2 weeks of not running for me, and then we'll test it out. So I'll try to do some. It's probably good for me. I need to do some. I haven't been going to the gym, so it'll give me a chance to do some other exercises other than running. But it was really weird because we've been having so much rain, I haven't even overworked it. So I don't know why, after 3 days of not running or not being able to run, that I went out today and hamstring strain. So,
well, I'm not going to give you the lesson on how not to exercise. So,
just give me the lessons on how to age better, because this aging thing sucks, except for the, you know, alternative.
Indeed.
So, again, frontline essential workers worldwide, thank you very much for all that you do. We have a long fight ahead of us, it looks like.
Indeed.
So just dig in. But everyone, try to do your best. Hopefully there'll be some more lockdowns and we won't have to ask people to wear masks and stay home. It'll be mandated.
Well, something. Yeah. Some solution. I'm lockdowns are, you know, they're difficult, but I think
not fun.
Yeah. But I think people do need to, you know, pull together a little bit.
Well, or be pulled together. You know, it is a tug of war, so let's pull them over to the other side, the right side. All right, on this week's show, we've got a telephone chat with Adam Jones of Oryx. We'll look at the Buffaloes, the Pacific League, the Central League, and particularly the surprising Swallows, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, as the sirens ring out in the background here, last week, I was able to, thanks to Sato-san of Oryx, I was able to sit down with Adam Jones of the Buffaloes for an interview we'd been trying to get since we knew he was coming, quite frankly, to Japan. But we got him, you know, and that's what matters. And the outfielder, he's 35. He played 14 seasons in the big leagues. You'll hear him say 13. And I think he's just melding together his first two part-time seasons into one season. But he started with Seattle, where he apparently became friends with Vladimir Coco Ballantyne, now of the Hawks. And he played more than 10 seasons in Baltimore and was with Arizona last season. And you'll hear Adam discuss how and why he landed with the Buffaloes. You might also notice an interruption yet again while I was at the office. And this time it was a friend, Sister Sarah, calling me during the interview and making the tape recorder or the recording app shut off and shut down. And I didn't know that was going to happen. And I kind of looked in shock when I looked over and saw that the tape recorder wasn't going. And AJ, a lot of people call him AJ. I feel like I can call him that now that we have spoken, although we have not yet met in person. But AJ was kind of on a roll. So I think you might notice that he's on a roll, and then all of a sudden I'm asking another question.
Yeah, I was thinking, what's up with that? I'm going like, damn, John, you've become me.
Never, never. What you say. I let my guests speak.
You do. Except, you know, I let you speak. Okay, let's move on.
There we go. All right. So, and you know, that reminds me. Anyway, if nobody said anything about the Brandon Laird chat where we had an interruption, so maybe nobody heard it. I didn't hear anything on Twitter. I didn't hear
anybody out there.
Didn't see anything on Facebook, and we didn't get any email about it. So maybe nobody could tell where it was. So that's good. Anyway, AJ is, you know, he's trying to learn pitchers. He's trying to change the Orcs culture. He's trying to win some games and learn the Japanese baseball culture. So let's take a listen and see how far he is getting with the Orcs Buffaloes. All right, joining us from Osaka is Adam Jones of the Orcs Buffaloes. Thank you very much for taking some time, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, anytime.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to that.
That's just a sentiment you say.
Yeah, well, I'm going to hold you to it anyway. You're in Japan now, man. You say something, you better mean it. All right, so I heard about your journey to Japan and reasons for coming here, but for our listeners in Japan, why did you pick NPB?
Well, you know, I mean, last offseason of 2018 was something I didn't really expect. You know, I thought that with my credentials, with me being, you know, well-respected in the game, you know, I thought that that warranted not a 5 or 6 year deal, but you know, at least a 2-3 year deal, maybe something in that range. And nothing happened. You know, I didn't end up signing until March 13th of 19. The team was already ingratiated in spring training.
Right.
And I'm, you know, very thankful that the Diamondbacks picked me up. I had an unbelievable time there with Torrey Lovello and his great staff and the organization. I mean, from top to bottom. You know, the president, Derek Hall, and the GM Hazen, were just some of the most professional individuals I've ever been around. So, especially later in my career, you know, so last year was my 13th year, so it was really, you know, really cool to see something different. And, you know, obviously I wasn't the headliner guy in the franchise, but it was really cool to see how the players really gravitated towards me and respected the accomplishments that I've been able to, you know, to do. And, you know, it was just something different. But, you know, I was just like, you know what, this offseason, right after the season, my agent reached out to me and said, you know, Orange Buffalo reached out and they got some interest in you. And I was like, you know, let me try and have one more year in the States. So maybe, you know, because we all want to play as long as we can. So,
yep.
You know, I just thought about it. And Orcs called back about 10 days later and said, well, we got a 2-year deal with X amount guaranteed. And I'm like, I looked at my wife and she's like, yo, ass better get on that.
Oh, we're a Disney show.
Hey, your tail better get on it.
There you go.
And you know, I just weighed the options, and it was, trust me, it wasn't easy.
I'm sure. Yep.
To make that decision, because I mean, I played 13 years in major leagues. Who doesn't want to finish their career the way they want to? But at the same time, I was thinking to myself, is, you know, and me and my wife talked about it a lot over bottles of wine, that you know, what if this offseason is the same as last? What if I don't get any job? And, you know, I just weighed the options and said, you know, this is just a situation that, you know, I need to embrace it. Somebody sure. wants me for more than 1 year. Sure. I'm not a rental. They want me to come here and, you know, make a splash on the organization, obviously on the field, but culturally, you know, with the things that I've been through, how long I've played, the adversity I've went through. They got a younger team here, so they want me to come and like kind of mentor some of the younger players.
Sure, sure.
And just be, you know, and just be some sort of a leader on their team. So, especially obviously, if you know me, you know I'm outspoken and not afraid to say anything. And I'm not afraid, but with coming along with that, I'm not afraid to push the next guy.
Right, right.
Yep. We have one goal. The goal is to win, but the goal is also it's more than winning. It's playing the game the right way, being a true professional, and understanding that this game is about it's most of the game is going to be failure, but how to handle the adversity. And,
gotcha.
You know, so far I've been able to reach out to some of the players on the team. You know, obviously there's some players that understand it, but there's also players that probably don't as well as they think they do. So,
right.
You know, I'm trying to be a positive light for everybody here. And You know, I think especially with what's going on in the States right now.
Definitely.
You know, not starting the season. I think it looks like I'm one of the smartest guys in the world, but I credit my wife and my agent for really seeing that this could be something really, really special. And, you know, I got my two boys over here, so we're just ingratiating ourselves.
Okay.
And adapting to the Japanese life. And my wife lived in Paris when she was young, our kids' age. So, you know, it was a lasting impression on her and her brother. So I was like, you know, why not?
Little bro, yeah, little bro. All right.
And the biggest thing though about that is let the next generation get their chance. You know what I mean? The next generation of major league players.
Sure.
Let them get their chance. I had my great opportunity. You know, I said I played 13 years.
Right.
I'm good on all fronts. You know, unless you want to say like you're chasing certain numbers, which if you want to play a numbers game, the only numbers that matter are championships in sports. So
I'm with you there.
Let the next generation get theirs. They got some talented players. So, you know, I'm happy with the decision I made. It took some time to come to fruition.
Okay. Now, before you answer all my questions before I ask them, my partner had a question. He says at the winter meetings, Nezbalelo said you were on a mission to turn Oryx around. Is that accurate?
Yeah. You know, I mean, something different. I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, like I said, one player is not going to, especially in baseball, one player is not going to dictate wins or losses or anything. But one player can help with culture.
Right.
One player can help with an overall attitude. And, you know, if you've seen me play, my attitude is stomp on their throats. You know what I mean? Like, play the game hard, play it right, and stomp on their throats. And after the game, rest up and bring it again tomorrow. And, you know, we got this team here is young. And, you know, I'm just trying to show them the veteran leadership that I have, because when I was a younger player, I had some really good veterans that were able to teach me not just the game between the lines, because,
sure,
you know, I mean, that's the physical part, but the mentality of it. And how do you go about being a true professional? How do you go about getting your rest? How do you go about getting the proper reps? You know, and then balancing your families, you know, and other outside extracurricular activities. So, you know, I've had a great group of guys in my corner my whole career, so I'm just trying to pass on that knowledge. I think that's a great attribute from the older generation, is that they were able to pass on that knowledge to the younger guys, to where you see guys become men right before your eyes. Because when you play a professional sport, you're rushed into responsibility, you're rushed into life.
Sure.
You're 26 years old. Most 26 years old are getting their career started, out at the bars, happy hours, and stuff like that. I mean, you got the best players in baseball right now at 21, 22. Obviously, Mike Trout at 28, 29. You know, and the responsibilities on their shoulders. Look at LeBron. He's only 35 years old, but he has the world on his back.
Sure.
And, you know what I mean? And most 35-year-olds just starting their family in the real business professional world. So athletes are thrown into the fire a lot quicker than the normal man. So, you know, I've been fortunate to have good some guys before me that, you know, taught me the ropes and taught me the game.
So how is it going over there in terms of, you know, making a difference with the Oryx?
So far, so good on my front. I think, you know, obviously between the lines, that's, you know, you're going against somebody else too. It's not like you're just playing against yourselves. But I think one thing I've installed is, hey, we can be down. That doesn't mean nothing. We can come right back.
Sure.
We can be up. We got to keep stay on the gas pedal.
But right.
Every day, play the game hard, play it right. Obviously, I can't change the style in which how they play baseball in Japan,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, some of the things I've seen, I'm just like, I've never seen that before. But at the same time, it's the style that they've been playing for decades. So it's not like I'm like, oh, well, we do this in the States. And when I first got here, my good friend Vladimir Valentin said, the first thing he told me is like, hey, you're not in America no more. You're not in MLB no more. You're in Japan. The way they do things are different. So you just have to adapt to it. And that's what I'm doing, but then adding a little bit of flavor to some of the things.
Now, it seemed in preseason you were, we got mail from fans who said it doesn't look like he's going to be able to adjust. And I said, you know, it looked to me that every at-bat you were taking, you were just doing homework, that the regular season was going to be a test and you were just gathering information. So how has this whole adjustment thing going? How did you look at the preseason and the practice games, and what's the biggest adjustment you make in here?
Well, that's exactly true. And like I said, our mutual friend Alonzo Powell told me that. He said, look, during spring training, take as many pitches. It doesn't matter the result. You're on the team. So just just do your homework on these guys because you don't know them. You have never, every guy I'm facing is facing them for the very first time. So, like, do your homework against them and just learn what they do, learn their tendencies, learn how their ball moves, learn how their ball rides, the splits, the forks. And, you know, I didn't have the greatest spring training numerically, but it wasn't about the numbers. It was about educating myself on how they pitch here and how they play the game here. So, you know, and there's always going to be somebody that says somebody can't do something. That's just humanity.
Oh, yeah. Trust me.
Yeah, that's just humanity. Everybody wants to tear down the next person for some odd reason. And, you know, and hey, I'm still getting to play while they get to watch.
Yeah, I keep telling people that a lot of players have different agendas in the preseason. Some guys are trying to make the team. Some guys are trying to get in shape. Other guys are working on particular weaknesses that they have been working on in the offseason. Everybody has a different agenda, so you can't really look at results and what a guy is doing in particular. Sometimes with the pitcher, they're working on a pitch.
For sure. I mean, look at Greg Maddux, one of the greatest pitchers of all time, carried a 9 ERA in spring training.
Yeah, okay. All right, so, yeah. Now, the season has started. Obviously, there are going to be fans starting here shortly, but you guys have been playing in this mostly silent with the benches yelling. I know you've been a big league player for a long time, and you had learned to block out some of the fan noise. Now you have to block out the silence. How do you do that?
It's definitely different. The spring training aspect of it was, we understood it, but once the season starts and it really counts and you know it counts, that adrenaline raises its levels. But our benches, both benches, are extremely loud and extremely positive and rooting the guys on. Granted, I don't understand their lingo and I don't understand what they're trying to say, but when they're screaming at the batter and yelling things at the batter, I think that it's, for the most part, positive and trying to root them on and stuff like that. So I think that part gets me going. Obviously, the fans get to come back soon, so I think that's going to be great. And I know, and it, obviously, it's going to be a limited amount of fans, but it's probably going to be the loudest limited fans that you're going to be able to hear. So I think that the players around this entire league are excited to go and play in front of the fans who support us. So I'm excited to see how the fans are here in Japan. I've heard they're loud. I played against Team Japan one time, and, you know, they were loud the entire game. So I'm excited to see how it is really here in Japan with the culture.
All right, yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see how, when the fans start coming in. Now you guys had that recent skid, and I'm sure it was tough, but how did you experience that in the locker room when you didn't really speak the language?
You know, just me, you know, through my interpreter, just tell everybody to remain positive. You know, we were only one hit away or one pitch away from winning 5 of the 6 games. We lost 5 of 6 by one run. So in games like that, you played a great game. You just didn't get one hit or you didn't make one pitch. So it's not like you just got your brains beat in, you know, 10-0, you know. So I just try to tell the guys, remain positive and keep fighting, keep grinding it out, and the good things will happen. And then we ended up winning 4 out of the next 6, and we're playing good ball. We lost last night, but we were able to put up 12 hits. So it's like, hey, until that last out is made, we can play hard. We can play the game hard, and that's what the guys are doing. So that's the respect factor that I have for the guys. Look, we can be down, we can be up, but the game ain't over. And the other team knows that too. So continue to fight until that last out is made.
Now, yeah, last night's game was one example in that. The thing I see with this team is it's really the finer points and the details of the game that are sometimes lacking. And for instance, you threw to the plate last night and a fairly speedy runner, but the throw got there in plenty of time. But your catcher set up a little bit, let's say, off kilter, and just wasn't able to. I mean, he had to field the ball on the on the bounce and get the glove down and all that stuff. I know it's hard. It's easy to sit there on TV on the couch and say he should have done this and he should have done that. But those are the things that seem to continuously happen with this particular team. And you talked about, you know, you talked about having this team work on the finer points of the game. So how do you do that in this instance with, for example, a catcher or a guy, an infielder or an outfielder, or just these other things in the game? Do you try to pull those guys aside and say, hey, this is what I've experienced?
In a way, the same time, these are grown men. They know how to play baseball, and I got to make a better throw. If I get to throw down a little bit more, you know, instead of a high hop, I get them on a low hop. We got a different play. But I mean, you got to see them. So the run scores, but it's what's followed it. You got a couple hits, and then a 3-run home run. So it just like ballooned real quick. You have to halt that part. You know, you have to get the next guy. You have to halt the big innings. You know, you give up 7 in one inning, it's hard to come back, especially you give up 7 in the second. You know, that just it can deflate the entire bench. But the guys kept swinging it. The guys kept being aggressive. You know, it's you never say die until that last out is made. So, it's, you know, they know how to play the game here. I'm not here to tell them and teach them how to play baseball. I think I can add a little bit of Western culture to how they play the game a little bit differently. You know, take advantage of certain situations. You know, there's some third basemen in the league that don't move that well. Why not drop a bunt down if you're not swinging it? I can't bunt anymore. I mean, I still can bunt. I just can't run no more like I used to. So
I didn't say that.
I don't see me bunting too much. But at the same time, it's like you have to play the game and take advantage of the situations. And that's the part I'm trying to teach. You know, if you're not swinging it well, hey, drop a bunt down. You know how hard it is to throw on the run from a third baseman to a first baseman? Like, these are things that, you know, I'm just trying to implement. And, you know, obviously they take the extra base here. They're really aggressive on the base pass. I'm never going to take away from that. But at the same time, it's just like, you know, play the game smart. Understand who's behind you. Like, if Yoshida, myself, Teo Cava, and Rodriguez is coming up, you don't need to be so aggressive on the bases because we can drive you in from where we're at.
Sure.
At home plate. So, you know, but then if you get close to the bottom of the lineup, okay, you might want to be a little bit more aggressive to put someone in a simpler situation than trying to drive you in from first.
All right. Well, we'll be watching your drive toward first as you go through the season, man. Appreciate the time today and stay healthy and good luck.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. I love the positivity. Thank you very much, AJ. And again, thank you very much to Oryx for allowing us that much time to sit down and chat. That was awesome.
No, I like how you let people speak, but when they say something that amuses you, like, we can come right back. I heard that little when he said, when the Buffaloes get behind, we can come right back. And I heard this little guffaw.
I'll have to listen to it again because that was just me looking at the next question. Maybe that was, you know what that was? That was me scrolling on my phone.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounded like a little chuckle. Okay. Now, anyway, I think it was really interesting, and I from a couple of standpoints. One is the systemic issues of, because we started talking about the issue of the labor market in MLB and Japan about 2 years ago.
Okay.
When we had the first dead free agent market 2 winters ago. And
yeah, the MLB market.
That is correct. And people started asking.
Yeah,
and this is the time when Shohei Ohtani was going to the States, maybe it was the winter before Shohei Ohtani went to the States. And this is when I became aware of certain systematic issues in MLB with the draft signing, the signing bonus pools and whatnot. And I thought, wow, the things have really changed, and this could be a way for amateur and veteran talent to move to Japan. But nobody comes out and says, this is what we're doing.
Right.
Because A, it's like when there's a systematic change, everybody's doing what's in their best interest. And it's not, but for Adam Jones to come out and say that the market was the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or an issue is new, because for most other people, most of the guys who come to Japan, but having looked at, you know, they see, this is my opportunity to play in Japan, period, done, I'm here.
Okay.
But for most of the players who come, it's a case of, okay, I've got a camp invite, I've got a guarantee that's not really a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've got a 1-year guarantee with an option in Japan, or I've got a 2-year guarantee in Japan. So there's that, you know, it's on a personal level.
Right.
And they're not interested in the system. They're not interested in the interested in the relative systems. But having said that, we've seen Gerardo Parra come, who was one of these guys who was going to be a borderline free agent. And we've had Matt Moore, who was a very regular starter for, you know, in the major leagues, 151 major league starts.
Right. And bonafide major league pitcher, yep. Right.
And a few other guys coming. Corey Spangenberg, guys who might 10 years ago have been looking at, you know, 1 year guarantees in MLB or 2 year guarantees. And now they're looking at basically, you know, get a tin cup, go look for a job on the street. I hadn't thought about it much. Yeah. I'd kind of put it in my pocket because it hadn't, you know, nobody had come out and announced that, you know, it wasn't a big change. It was a subtle change, but obviously this is something that is happening. So I thought that was quite interesting, or at least that sort of opened my eyes to what was happening in front of me. So I'm glad he mentioned that. Mm. The other thing that I want to comment on is something that I listened to Adam Jones and his podcast, Heckled Ease, and he talks a lot about different things. And I enjoy it because he's very well-spoken and well-traveled. And he has an ability, and he did so here, to present his fairly rare perspective as a professional athlete on things that affect the lives of professional athletes, but say them in a way that any knucklehead can understand.
Which was?
He was talking particularly about the pressures placed on young players. You know, we fans, you know, we see professional baseball player, you know, doing something goofy or acting inappropriately for an adult. And we sometimes fail to realize that these are, you know, 21-year-olds being asked to be 10 years older than the rest of us.
Okay.
Well, not older than me, mind you, but most people, young adults. Okay. So, but he said that so well that I thought, and I've heard him talk a lot, and I've always struck by his ability to say something that's I don't really think about, or you know, and I say, oh wow, that makes a lot of sense. So he's really good at that. It's like he'd be a really good teacher.
Hmm.
So I enjoyed that part, and. And that was. I mean, there were many things, but I want to let you talk for a change.
For a change, he says. Well, you know, I was sitting down with the phone, getting ready for the interview, and I just kind of remembered the gaze that Adam Jones had as he was staring out toward the field. I think perhaps contemplating what he had gotten himself into with the Buffaloes during that six-game sweep at Chiba. I don't remember what game it was. It might have been game four. When they were going to lose the series, they had lost the series after losing game four, and they had made some goofy mistake or something and lost the game. And, you know, I like what he said about the fact that I'm not going to change the style of Japanese baseball. I'm not going to come over here and be the guy who's going to make an impact on the culture that way. But he also admitted that he has seen things he had never seen before. I thought that was compelling stuff, right off the bat. And during that streak, he talked about the fact that they lost all the games but one by one run, so that they were in the games. And I'm here to say tonight that that's the point with this team. You know, I want to focus on what Adam was talking about, but that's the thing. It's the finer points of the game, and some of the things that go unseen to observers, including the media, because we don't get the insight on what the plan is all the time, but we just see the result of not getting the job done. For example, today they couldn't get a couple of bunts down, and I think one, they just didn't get it down, and then the guy ended up striking out, and then later on they got the bunt down, but was Takuya Kai, and he pulled out the cannon and got the out at second base. But it's those little things. Now, we obviously saw them not be able to do those things, and we saw the a runner get thrown out at third, which we'll get to later on in a big inning. But I always give basketball analogies, so I want to go away from that and do an English analogy. And it's like a team that, for example, if you were taking an English test and you didn't know when to use I or me, or you didn't know when to use who or whom, but you know that most of the time it's I. So you just use I all the time, and you just fill that in on the answer sheet. And then you know it's who most of the time instead of whom, and you fill that in. But a lot of times it should be whom, and it should be I or me. And you just don't waste the time or use the time to figure out which one it should be. And that's the way I see this team. You know, they're out there, they're doing the things, they're playing the game, but they're not taking the time to get the exact pinpoint details of how to go about doing things. And, you know, when I asked Adam about that, he said, well, yeah, everything's going fine for me as far as that, you know, that change of culture goes. But Adam isn't on the mound. He's not catching. He's not on the infield. He's not in center field like the third year outfielder Hayato Nishiura was on Saturday when he ran down a ball and had it tick off his glove for, I guess, a non-error mistake. But that run was, it ended up, and I don't want to say that that lost the game. That just ended up being the difference in the game, because it allowed a run to score. And, you know, you can't blame any one specific play all the time, although there always seems to be a lot of fodder with the Buffaloes, and there's things to look at. Like today, I think, I said we'll get to it later, but it's Yo Adachi who was thrown out at third to help wreck an inning. Now, you know, they had bases loaded, nobody out, and I think it was AJ who hit a fly ball to center, and it's Yuki Yanagita out there, one of my favorite players in NPB. We know he has a really good arm, and he made a fantastic throw, but Adachi was going to be probably safe, but he got tagged out because he slid past the bag. And, you know, no, you can't do those kinds of things. That's certainly a correctable error, but do you really need to be doing that at that particular time when you guys are down runs? And they won a game in this series against the Hawks, 1 out of 5, and I think it was a 1-1 game, and they played, you know, they played one of those games where they didn't make those mistakes and they won it. But in all the other ones, you can point to a bunch of plays. I'm sure you can point to a bunch of plays in any 1-run game, so I'm not picking on them for that. But it just seems that that's the kind of culture that, you know, AJ can come on and say, hey, look, son, you know, think about the situation. You got a really good arm out there in center field. Do you need to be trying to move over or move anywhere against that particular guy? You know, can we glue you to a base here, you know, so we can keep this inning going? Maybe. I mean, you know, the next guy could have hit into a double play, so it would have all been for naught anyway, but it really took the air out of the sails. And those are the kinds of things. And, you know, I heard a lot of good stuff from Adam, and I hope he can pull it off. And I really like his approach and his attitude. When he talked about the fact that he was doing a lot of studying, that he talked to our friends, Coco Ballantine and Alonzo Powell, and you know, we didn't talk about no fastball counts or anything like that, but I'm sure he has gotten an earful from those guys about what to expect and those things. And,
well, I was listening to him the other day, and Adam, if you're listening, where's CC? We want to hear CC. and he's talking about, it sounded like some other AJ, although more specific. He says they throw fastballs. I mean, I don't see any, but they throw them. And I'm watching it. It's pretty much true. I mean, I've probably seen, I don't know, a tenth of his at bats. Mm-hmm. Just to be generous. Probably more, but I'll stick with a tenth. And it's, you know, he sees the fastballs, you know, foot outside or in the dirt or, you know, up in the ceiling, or
they'll buzz the strike
zone. Yeah, well, yeah, he got one today, and it really, it's like he didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, like, what the heck?
Yeah. Well, it had been, you know, it had been stuff, you know, it had been slow stuff in outside, and he missed inside with a fastball, and he's like, going, "What the heck?"
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it is. I understand that. You know, he's, but you know, he'll adjust. He didn't get here. Didn't come. You know, he's not come. He didn't just drop off the turnip wagon. So
no. And you know, I do see him. As long as he can stay healthy, because he hit a foul ball the other day, it bounced off the ground and popped him in the face. So as long as weird stuff like that doesn't happen, and he doesn't do a hammy like I did today, running out there in left field or right field or wherever they put him in the outfield, I think he's going to be okay. But you know, I did like the fact that he said, "Look, he can't go out and tell these guys how to play baseball. They're all professionals." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's true. But tell them something, man. Tell him something, because you can't have some of these goofy things that continue to happen with the Buffaloes and cause them to lose game after game of these, you know, like today, a one-run game."
Well, you said something interesting, and I don't, it's not that I want to contradict you as much as amplify it.
Okay.
And maybe clarify, perhaps, because it's not that they're losing close games that's the problem. Because that can be, you know, a lot of different things. And I never forget,
sure.
You know, because sometimes you see a team and I'm not that astute, but I do remember really well seeing the 2006 Nippon Ham Fighters play us. This is back in the day when you and I would like watch a whole series or watch like two. We used to go, and John would cover like the weeknight series, and I'd cover the weekend series, or we'd switch, and we'd each cover two or three games a week.
Yep.
Remember those days? Oh my gosh.
Back in the day.
Anyway, it was early in the 2006 season, and the Fighters, this is was the season where, about June, Trey Hillman's job was on the line, and because they didn't have a contract extension talks like he expected, and they were just sort of non-communicative, and they came out of the gate really bad. And I remember writing a column about how they were losing a lot, but when you actually watched them play, you could see that they were playing well, that they were playing hard. And it was a case of things kind of not going their way.
Okay.
And so, yeah. So, but what you're saying and what you clarified is they're losing a lot. They're losing a lot because of a number of correctable mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just wanted to sort of throw that in, because it's not just the losing close games. It doesn't mean
sure.
Making mistakes is, you know, it could be anything, But yeah, I certainly see your point. You do see a lot of that with the Buffaloes. In fact, that's kind of I think they may have copyrighted it, trademarked it in Japan, because it is kind of their history. And I feel bad about this every time I see Yoichi Adachi show us what he can do, because he's one of these Jekyll and Hyde characters. I mean, he's a fabulously talented ball player, and he has these moments of clarity where you know he knows how to play baseball. And then he has other moments where it's like, dude, didn't somebody tell you we never do this when we play baseball?
Yeah.
You know, it's
what are
like
you doing, son?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know him. I've never spoken with him as much as I'd like to. There's so many guys on the Buffaloes I really want to talk to right now, because I've seen this whole range this year, from really, really good plays to the really, you know, the normal sort of head scratchers.
Yep.
And that's and the fun thing about the and I find the Buffaloes, it's hard to say this, but I find them perhaps the most compelling team to watch this year.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because I see that. You know, because you see them do, when you do things, they do things right, and you see the talent, and you see them, it looks like, oh man, they've taken that next step. You know, they're moving forward. They're being precise. They're being clinical. And then the next day, but and you see it in the same game. You know, we saw that in the game in Sunday's game. So yeah, I mean, yeah. That whole Hawks series was a case of games. I mean, that they were like three blowouts, but the blowouts were often, they didn't need to be blowouts.
They didn't need to be. Well, let's shift and talk about the Buffalo. So like I said, they did lose 5 of 6 to the Hawks in this series. And the guy I think we spoke about last time, the right-hander Yu Suzuki, the team's 9th pick in 2014 and a pitcher who stopped the big skid by beating the Lions a couple weeks ago. And was that a couple weeks ago? Let's say 3 weeks ago. And he, you know, threw one run over six innings, allowed one run over six innings against the Hawks on Wednesday, but Oryx loses that game. And the bullpen seems to be a glaring problem to me. I can't say it's any worse than some of the other things that I've seen on the bases or on defensive decisions, but the ERA is over 5. It's second worst in NPB, only behind Hanshin, which, you know, luckily got to see Junichi the past three games, so the bullpen ERA got a little bit better. You know, Brandon Dixon isn't a shutdown closer in the 9th, and my man Hirotoshi Zenshin Masui is hot and cold, and the big boy is what I used to call him, but Keisuke Sawada, he lost some weight, so I don't think I can call him the big boy, but I have been calling him the waiter.
He's still in it with the.
He's still tall.
He's still in the sweepstakes. He's still in the sweepstakes with Taira Kaima, though. He's got the. They could go a few.
Sure.
Sumo tournaments.
Sure, but so I won't call him the waiter, but I'm sorry, I won't call him the big boy, but I will call him a waiter because he's been serving up stuff.
He has. Well, he's serving it up on the farm team, I think, right now.
Yeah, I did notice that he was shipped out, but you know, not doing very well with a 6 ERA and 0-2 record, a couple home runs allowed, more hits allowed than innings pitched, and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, if they're going to compete and win these tight games, it's going to have to improve in that respect because, you know, they're getting decent starting pitching.
I would say decent is probably an understatement.
Yeah, because they're getting a lot of quality starts.
And
but
from who? From Yu Suzuki, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, from the 9th round pick in 2014,
Tajima. Well, we knew Daiki Tajima could throw, and we knew that. But, yeah, and then Sachi Yamasaki. I'm going like, hold on here. Hold on. Just hold on.
Yeah, I think he's the one who got the win this past week. It was his first win.
It was indeed. First win forever. It was, well, this is always, Oryx has always had the ability to get, you know, overall decent starting pitching. And the bullpen has come and gone. But they've always been that sort of, I don't know why they've decided, but it seems an organizational plan to be a pitching and defense team. And the defense is, I mean, they have guys who have the defensive tools.
Yes.
But as
they don't always bring them.
They're always
in the right spot.
Or they're not always so sharp.
Yeah. There's something, they're bringing the wrong tool for the wrong job.
Okay, and, I don't know, but yeah. So no, the starting pitching has been, you know, really fun to watch, and that's part of the compelling thing. And you know, we've talked about Oryx having these sort of like Swiss Army knife images of their infield and outfield, where every guy is an interchangeable part. You know, Yuma Mune's at third base; he's in center field. This guy's at shortstop. One day's at third base; the next they're back to second base, and right. I just don't, and I haven't been able to figure out what it is, but I've always looked at it, and I think we do look at these things and we think, that's chaos, because it looks chaotic. It looks like chaos. It looks like there's not a plan, but that all that really means is we don't see the plan, and as you often point out, and I'm almost convinced there is a plan here. I don't know.
Almost.
You know, I don't know. I haven't been able to figure it out yet. So I haven't been able to develop this. But it could well be that somebody in Oryx said, you know, this coronavirus, I'm just positing here. This coronavirus is a health problem, and we want to make sure guys, you know, except for the guys we absolutely need to start every day, Yoshida, Nederland, Rodriguez, and Adam Jones, we want everybody having a day off once a week. We want everybody rested. We want guys to take time on the farm team. We want to have guys off the active, you know, not available for games. Maybe that's the point. That could be a plan, in which case, you know, let's see how that works. But again, I find Oryx just really, really compelling. And I don't know if it's like, you know, a drug I'm addicted to or some sort of bad habit, but I'm really enjoying the heck out of the Oryx Buffaloes. So, you know, I know baseball aficionados, please don't at me on Twitter.
Don't at him.
You know, don't go nutso on me, but I find them to be a lot of fun, and I'm pulling for them.
Yeah, I often tweet about the team. I watch the game. I really am intrigued by watching Adam Jones because we haven't, I guess, the last big name major league player who came over. I don't know if you want to say that, but Kevin Youkilis, when he came over.
He only played 10 games. So.
Yeah, he wasn't here very long, and that was my goal, is to get out and talk to him as quickly as possible.
As quickly as possible. He said, it's opening day. We got a meeting. Can I talk to you tomorrow? And that was the last time I ever saw him.
Right, but I got the interview for the show, and then he was gone. You know, and that was it. So I'm not comparing. I'm just saying, you know, when we get these guys who come over from the major leagues and have a big name, I like to go out and talk to them, and I like to watch and see how they play and try to adjust. And that was something that I was watching in the preseason, and it's just fun to watch. But yeah, this team, I mean, you want to root for the team. It hasn't won in so long. I did a story this past week that ran in the online and in the paper, and talking about how many times, I think it's six times, finished last since 2005 when the first season after the merger, and it's just,
and our manager died. It was so bad.
Yeah, well, that's just unfortunate, but
yeah,
God rest his soul. But yeah, it's a compelling team. I think you're right about that. And even Dio Ota, who came up, and this past week Ota comes on and gets his first hit as a pro, and that was it was the first at bat of the season, I believe.
Yes.
And he hits a home run, and then the next night he hits a home run. And they've got some compelling figures on the team and some interesting players, but we're going to have to move on and talk about other teams. But they're fun to watch. AJ, thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you.
And, you know, Jim and I are both available to be on your podcast and teach you a little bit of something about Japanese baseball that you might not know.
Oh, I don't.
I think he has more than I do. He's got a great amount of resources. He doesn't need us, right? Yakking in his ear. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the Pacific League now. The Fighters looked good and bad in their series against the Marines, which they split 3-3. So, you know, I talked about Sho Nakata in the prediction special for the Pacific League, and I said, you know, the guy, whatever bad things we say about him, when you look at his numbers at the end of the season, they are comparable to the other guys who are supposed to carry a team. And, you know, he had, a series like that where he hit some home runs, but then he had some poor at-bats, let's say, and he had some pitches that he could have done something with that he just missed. And I've still seen guys like that who are getting pitches but not doing anything with them. But he did enough, and they split that series. I thought that was another, I wouldn't say a fun series, but it was definitely back and forth. You know, you had one team whipping up on one team one night, and then the next night the other team would come back. And so it was kind of a back and forth, up and down. And then
Up and down. I mean, it's
until today.
Well, yeah. Well, back and true. But, you know, if you're going to have Christian Villanueva playing in a series, then it should be up and down and back and forth and all over. It should be like really good and really weird at the same time.
Yeah, he had one, I think it was the same game. He makes a really great play,
right,
where he comes in and grabs a ball and throws. And then he has a ball. He's trying to turn a double play on. He grabs it and steps on third base and then throws off balance to first base. And geez,
he had
the cameraman ducking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So probably wasn't the best decision to make, but
And good at bats and bad at bats, and it's just fun, you know.
He had some home runs, yeah, and then he had some at bats that he couldn't get, you know, he couldn't get anything done. So what are you saying? What's your point?
Well, I mean, it was the, you know, that's
Jekyll and Hyde, huh?
Well, yeah, it's perfect. The Fighters are kind of are not that far from the Buffaloes.
They're all over the place.
In a sense, yes. They're less consistent in that we can see the Buffaloes and say, okay, starting pitching is this, and the defense is this, and the base running is this, and the, you know, the Fighters have the, first of all, we knew that unless Christian Villanueva hit home runs, and unless Hwang Pojung became the player the Fighters hoped he would be when they signed him from from Taiwan, that they were going to struggle to score runs. We knew this, and they have. And Sho Nakata is having a very good year for him, and they're still struggling. They're still struggling on offense. Okay. Kohei Arihara wins his first game, and, you know, and people are going, oh, wow, gritty performance. Well, gritty, yeah, because he wasn't very good.
Yeah.
So
I told you I've never been impressed with him, but anyway.
Oh, he has these moments, but he had this whole second half, the first half of last year. He was really good.
He was.
But I think, you know, again, did he adjust or did people adjust? My guess is, you know, is the Brandon, my response to the Brandon Laird question. He fell back into old habits, and B, people adjusted, and that some combination of the two, he kind of regressed to his mean. So it was a good season overall, but the second half was more or less his career norm. So,
we're talking about a guy in his sixth year still being not the guy I think they got when they expected him to be when they drafted. Not that he hasn't been a good pitcher.
I think
they expected a little bit more.
Well, you always expect a little more, but
right. But I'm looking at the Fighters and I'm seeing, you know, lineups all over the place, sort of rotations. We got short starters. We got long relievers. We got pinch hitters. I bet it's a real challenge to even prepare for this team because you really never know what's coming at you. It's got to be a headache for guys coming in for these series because they could see literally anything. In fact, I think the other night when Takayuki Kato ended up being a short starter, I had the feeling that the Marines thought they were going to see him another time through the lineup or something, but I don't know. It's just goofy. So it's no surprise to me that they're struggling. I think everybody predicted that they would struggle in our prediction show, but it just seemed like it was going to look different. And I'm looking at the records now, and my impression was that the Fighters and the Dragons had about the same record. The Dragons have 10 wins and the Fighters have 10 wins and Orcs has 9. And 9, that's the fewest in the Pacific League. And then the fewest in the Central League is 9 for the Carps. So, those two teams, I mean, the Carps seem to, in my mind, they're having a better season than the Fighters. But
well, they are because the reason they haven't won as many games is because they haven't played as many games.
Okay. But yeah, they've got two ties, I mean, including tonight. So but yes, you are correct. The rain has been on their parade here in the Central League so far. What about the Eagles? They had this rubber match. They had one game rained out in their six game series against the Lions. And so they came into the rubber match today and they got a grand slam from Yasuhito Uchida in a 6-run seventh inning. And so they end up pulling away and beating the Lions, winning that series 3-2 with 1 rainout. But they didn't do much to stop Hotaka Yamakawa. Not that anyone has.
Yeah, it was
so
pretty much
no surprise.
The Hideto Asamura Hotaka Yamakawa home run derby disguised as a 6-game series.
Right. Yamakawa homered in 3 straight, and he hit a 3-run shot on Saturday that tied the score. And then Takaya Nakamura cracked the game winner. And then, the bullpen, it's a much improved bullpen, I think, for Seibu. And I think that short of, you know, some hiccups here and there, that bullpen is a lot different. And I think that changes the dynamic if this team can make it to the playoffs, because that has been an issue. They've won the Pacific League the past two seasons, and they get into the playoffs and their poor starting pitching and lack of ability to hold teams down when they go to the bullpen has been costly in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was.
But I really like the. I like Reed Garrett has really looked.
Yeah,
good.
He's been sharp. And the other thing about this series, kind of interesting, is that the Eagles, the quote unquote two best pitchers, basically fell on their face: Takayuki Kishi and Takahiro Norimoto. I mean, Norimoto was gritty and tough, but his splitter is not right. His splitter isn't drop. It isn't tumbling. It's kind of the spin on it looks doesn't quite look right to me. But of course, I know pretty much nothing. As somebody criticized me when I criticized the Hanshin Tigers, I said basically I don't know the difference between a goofball and a curveball, but that's not too far off. But yeah, it seems like he's not getting he's getting kind of a side spin on the splitter, which is keeping it from dropping as much. And I know that was an old issue with him, having talked to the Eagles' former pitching consultant. So I'm curious about that, because he was leaving a lot of them. He was not locating it. It wasn't going where he wanted it to, and it wasn't dropping like he wanted it to, and that caused him a lot of trouble. But the thing is, you know, the guy who had no business being 4-0 pitched like he deserved to be 4-0 the other day, and that was Hideaki Wakui. I mean, this guy was tough. He was, you know, he's the Wakui we see about two times a year. You know,
right?
This guy can really. First of all, he knows how to pitch, and so when he's got enough of his command and location, you know, his command and his movement,
right?
You just really have to cross your fingers and hope for runs, because he's gonna stick it to you if that's the days. Those days don't come often a lot, but he doesn't. You know, when he's actually having said that, that works for most pitchers. What I've noticed is when guys got three pitches that are working and they're reliable and they know they're reliable,
right?
Yeah, that's going to be a long day for the other guys most of the time, unless they're a new guy who really doesn't know what they're doing and he decides to go with the pitch. Daisuke Matsuzaki used to do this. He'd be like, I really like my four seam fastball. You know, he was getting great results with a cutter, but you know, he's like going, kind of fastballs are for sissies. I'm going to blow people away with my heat. And and so young pitchers will do that a lot, but experienced guys, when things are working, yeah, just sort of, you know, buckle down and try to find a run somewhere.
Well, yeah, he looks good. I think, what is he, tied for the league lead? And
yeah, 4-0.
He's got 4 and hasn't lost any, so look for him to be player of the month for July.
Indeed. How did that escape me?
Because I don't think we haven't heard much about what's going to go on with those things, but I'm assuming they're going to start getting we're going to get an email about candidates this week. So
yeah, since they started the season on the 19th of June, I assume that they'll do the annual March April. Maybe they'll call it the Player of the Month for March and April.
Hashtag high heat.
And then there's Daichi Suzuki of the Eagles, and I tell you this. He's hitting well, but I tell you, I think he's having his best defensive season that I've ever seen.
He's a joy.
Third base.
Yeah, I just love this guy. And I'll be honest, I didn't watch him a lot when he played for the Marines, because they've just been pretty bad the last couple of years.
Okay. And you got to watch the bad teams too, though, man.
I know I do, but it's when they're bad, it's when they're bad and boring. Sorry, Steve, I said it. And it's probably because I don't follow them enough that I don't quite grasp their charm. But yeah, they seem to me, that's how they seem to me. And I apologize if I'm offending Marines fans, but I know you people are all really good quality human beings, and you will hold it against me.
Okay.
But anyway, but having said that, Freckles is really becoming one of my favorite players.
Taiji Suzuki Freckles. Okay. Yeah, he's got some blemishes on his skin. Yeah, okay. We'll call him Freckles.
Well, what a joyful player. I mean, what a guy who can just really, he's a grinder. And, you know, and last year when the Marines said, hey, we need you to play left field today, he's like, oh, good. I'm glad I brought my left fielder's glove. You know, it's like,
yeah, I like what he's doing. And I like this team to contend. You know, I just, injuries, obviously, but they're getting, just like you talked about, the Oryx just giving guys off a day off a week. It seems like the Eagles are giving some of their players off once in a while, just moving things, just changing things.
Yeah, pretty much everybody except Genji Akaminai, although he's been spelled a little bit. Genji Akaminai and Hidetomo, even Asamura had a day off. So, yeah, pretty much everybody's getting days off. So I like that. Even Hikaru Ota, the catcher, who I almost can't say enough about, but that's, we know I can say enough about everything.
Okay. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and hit the Central League. Now, you know, the Carp seem to be the only team they seem to only be effective against the Dragons at the moment, but it was the Swallows who woke up in first place on Wednesday, and they look good, and I want to say they look good in certain areas because still, you know, the back half of the rotation seemed to pick things up right after last week's show when I mentioned that the back half of the rotation wasn't all that great. But then Albert Suarez, the older of the pitching brothers, the pitching Suarez brothers, and some of you might remember Roberto pitches for Hanshin.
Robert
pitches.
Yeah, I call him Roberto, and he looked at me with scorn.
Okay, all right. Robert pitches for Hanshin. And you know, Albert got the thumbs down. He got sent out to the farm recently to go and work on some control issues, but he pitched in a game, didn't really give up much. He just walked some guys, but he didn't give up runs. So.
Yeah, we don't know really. Yeah, that was a mystery.
That was the report. So
yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah, that is the thing. And, you know, of course, the Japanese media was, you can't send him to the farm because he's leading the Central League in ERA. How dumb is that? You know, it's like,
right. If he needs to work on stuff,
Tatsumaru Hara doing it, they'd be going like, wow, what a brilliant move.
Right. perhaps. But here's another team on which the bullpen has improved. And you know, you've got rookie manager Shingo Takatsu, a former pitcher, and just, you know, the pitching has been a lot better. And I think that was something that we could expect. And so I'm not so surprised that that's happening. But the thing I've noticed about the Swallows is it seems like Takatsu is, you know, he's going to various arms over the course of a week. He's not necessarily relying on one or two specific guys in certain situations. He's just, you know, he seems to have that, maybe a bullpen rotation that you talked about with Hiroshi Gondo a long time ago. Oh, yes. Really? Yeah. Because one night he went to Noboru Shimizu, who's for those of you who are, I guess, been listening the past couple of years to the show, Shimizu's grandmother goes to the gym, my previous gym. I've since changed gyms, but she goes to the gym, and she told me, yeah, my grandson's pitching for the Swallows. He's a rookie. You know, this was last year because this is Shimizu's second season. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll keep an eye out on for him. And then when I get a chance to talk to him, I'll tell him that I go to the gym with you. But I've since changed gyms and I still haven't met up with Shimizu, even though when I went to camp, I specifically went looking for him after, you know, before or while I was searching for Tony Barnett. But anyway, and Shimizu lost the game on Thursday, but, you know, it was the first time he had allowed any runs this season.
Right, he's been electric. So.
Yeah, so he has been good, and, you know, it's much improved, like I said, except maybe Taichi Ishiyama at the back end, who's just, you know, he's a tightrope walker. He's one of the Wolandas.
Well,
you know?
He had those flying Wolandas, yeah. But he had that year 2 years ago that, you know, it's like, when he was one of the best pitchers in the Central League. And it was like, this is a guy who 9 years ago had two saves. And this year he's got, you know, 26 or something. And he's just lights out. And then he hurt his arm. And, that, you know, it's like somebody took the genie and stuffed it back in the bottle. You know, he got his wish. but I noticed that, you know, what you're saying, I continually looking at the Swallows and saying, hold on a second, what happened to Scott McGuffin? What happened to Taishi Ishiyama? And, you know, the other day they weren't in the game, but he was doing, you know, and Shimizu was, and I thought, but again, this is a different kind of year, and Takatsu is an unknown quality, and I agree with your analysis. He's probably just given people opportunities to, you know, people he believes in.
That too, and I think, you know, being a reliever, he knows that a lot of times you either get overworked or underworked, and I think he's trying to keep it consistent. You know, guys, you're going to pitch X number of times a week, and that's going to be it. And if you're on the team, you're on the team for a reason, and that's to go and get outs. So I'm going to put you out there, and I'm going to expect you to get some outs. And they just go with it. It's just like when Shimizu was not having his best night the other night, they didn't just yank him. They let him try to pitch out of it. So,
yeah, well, I think that's
the plan. Probably, that's part of the plan.
I haven't thought about it a lot, but yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. We're seeing a lot of that in the positions too with the Swallows. You know, I think this sort of Oryx, the Swallows are a version of that. Pretty much everybody's moving around and I don't want to say playing around. That's a Tigers thing this week, but yeah, people are moving around and a lot of utility guys are playing different positions. And so it's, I think it is probably part of that plan.
And I do think Alcides Escobar, I really liked him at shortstop when I was at camp, and there's no shock that he's really improved the defense at that position, but they've also given him some time off. Naomichi Nishiura has been getting some time there because of his bat and his one week where he kind of exploded. But I tell you who I really like, and if I can remember his name right, because I tweeted it out wrong the other day, but Munetaka Murakami, I said I believed he was going to crush it this year, and he has been doing, you know, not every game, and you can't expect that from a 20-year-old and a 30-year-old even. You can't expect that from any player, but he had a double last night where he just flicked the bat and, you know, raked it over the center fielder's head in Hiroshima. And I'm thinking, you know, he didn't even hit that ball hard. So I like this team. I said it wasn't going to finish last. I'm sure I picked the Carp for that. So I will never forget that. But I could see this team finishing in the top half of the Central League standings. And
yeah, it could, and I think.
But it a lot has to happen because we still don't know what the pitching is going to be like when it gets serious in the second half of this season, when, you know, they're looking for guys to start games. And
we don't, but I see that Takatsu's, or at least what I interpret, my interpretation is he's sort of with the pitchers, he's going to guys and, you know, this is what you can do. Okay. And I think with Albert Suarez, it was a case of, look, you know, I saw you here last year when I was the pitching coach, and this is what I want you to work on specifically and give you some rest perhaps. And, you know, it could well be that that's the plan. He's one of these guys. I was talking about him with a colleague. There's a number of guys in Japanese baseball who like to act kind of like they don't know what they're doing. They like to joke around a lot. They like to do kind of goofy things.
Mm-hmm.
Who are typically university graduates.
Okay.
But look like they're not always playing with a full deck, or at least it's their public persona. And I'll give you two names. One's Yuki Inagita and the other is Ryosuke Kikuchi.
They
like to fool around. They like to play around. They like to give kind of off the wall answers to questions. But when you talk to them, they can be very deliberate and organized to their thinking. And Takatsu is another one, and I think he was very much like that as a player too. He did a lot of goofy stuff. This is a guy who played pro baseball until he was, you know, he was my age almost.
Yeah, in any league that would have him, yeah.
Taiwan and Korea, and he knows what's going on. I have the feeling he's a very sharp character. He looks more of it as a manager than he did as a young player in particular.
True. I agree.
But yep. I think when you grew up in the Swallows of the 1990s, you kind of had to have a prison mentality when Katsuya Nomura was the manager, that you had to have like a little craziness to stay sane.
I love it. All right. As for teams like the Carp, they've been a little bit inconsistent. The Tigers been a little bit inconsistent. I guess those are to be expected.
Yeah, you know, there's the fun thing with the Tigers this week. You know, one of my favorite Japanese holidays is Respect for the Elderly Day.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tigers are kind of like the Respect for the Elderly team. And I mean this in the best way. Almost
Kosuke
like
Fukudome and Yoshihiro Itoi and Atsushi.
Yeah, right, Takashi Toritani, but...
Yeah, Atsushi
Nomi. I guess that was a lack of respect for the elderly, I suppose.
Whoa,
but
yeah.
Kosuke Fukudome comes off the bench at the age of 49 and just has a big game.
49 game. Yet.
Oh, 43, excuse me. Did I say 49?
You did. But yeah.
Wow, I didn't mean, sorry, Julio Franco, I didn't mean just to cut muscle, have somebody muscle in on your territory. At the
slip of the knife, I mean the tongue.
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, at the age of 43, came off the bench and cracks the double, and he cracks a go-ahead home run. And then he had a big game tonight, and just marvelous stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But just, a little bit inconsistent, although they've been better since the guys seem to get back into form. We've only been playing for a month plus here, so that's to be expected. And then the other team the Giants have been fairly consistent. I think I picked them to win the Central League. They've been early on, they were a little bit down or mediocre, but I think they've been winning consistently since that week and a half, and they've been pretty consistent. But it's the Dragons. I mean, I wish I could say good things about the Dragons. I certainly expected more, and obviously they had their guy, their hottest hitter in Shuhei Takahashi get injured. He had a hamstring, so I'm with you, bro. And then Yuya Yanagi, probably their top pitcher, although he wasn't the opening day starter, but he was probably their top pitcher, and he went down. And they brought up their prized rookie, Takaya Ishikawa, to play third base for Takahashi while he was out. And, the kid doubled. He's a 19-year-old rookie. He doubles on his first, I think it was his first swing. I don't remember. I did see the at-bat. But anyway, his first at-bat, he gets a double. And then since then, as I tweeted out tonight, he's been creating a lot of breeze around stadiums here and there, fanning at pitches, and he just doesn't look ready. Although you've been watching Pro Yaki News as well this week, the guys seem to just keep saying, well, he's close. He looks good. He doesn't look intimidated. And I'm like, well, he's not. He doesn't look intimidated, but he's not helping the team. So get him down on the farm. I mean, I believe he was only hitting about 250 on the farm anyway. I get him back down there. He needs work. But they're really hurting at that respect. And then you said they're like the twin team of the Buffaloes, but they've been worse. They've been really bad at situational hitting. They've been bad at pitching. They're starting pitching. They're having to use guys who probably aren't top team level, but they have to throw them out there to start, and they're trying to get through, and they're doing their best, and they're hanging in some games, but there's just a lot of pressure when you can't score. And for them to score, it seems like it's almost like the process of giving birth. I mean, it takes so much time and pain just to get one run.
It takes three innings for Dion Viciato's plate appearance
turn to come back up, and he's the only one hitting right now. So it's unfortunate they don't look very good. There's still time to turn things around, but it just doesn't look like it's going to happen unless somebody's start pitching better and somebody else starts hitting more consistently.
Well, I thought, I was intrigued. Another game that intrigued me this week was the UD Ohno start.
Oh, yes, yes, at Hanshin. I guess that was the first night in Hanshin.
Yeah, who pitched? Was it Koyo Aoyagi? No, it was.
Yeah, I believe it was. Because they don't hit that guy.
Right. Well, nobody hits him, really. I mean, he killed. There probably was a high worm killed count that day. I think there were 16 ground outs in 7 innings. But it was one of these games where I thought, Ohno actually pitched really, really well. And you realize when you watch a game like that, how close the margin is between winning and defeat. And I feel bad because in my blog, I'll say, oh, you know, he hit a mistake and there's lots of mistakes made. And I, you know what I feel bad about is saying this guy made a mistake that 99.9% of the people his age are not good enough to make.
And he got pinched by the umpire. He was a victim of some poor defense as well.
And
I think the Dragons in that series dropped 2 pop flies.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, it was this one inning where he got pinched on the first pitch to Yoshio Hitoi, and he kind of lost his spirit. It's like he threw a strike inside, and the umpire's going, nope. And then he threw 3 outs. Get me another batter. Let's see if that changes the umpire's view. But it was that, and it was 2 fluke base hits. I mean, he shatters somebody's bat, and the ball lands over the mound. Okay.
Yeah, there was some bad luck involved.
There's another one where the guy barely makes contact, and the ball rolls, and it's a swinging bunt that rolls 20 feet up the third baseline and stops. So... Yeah. You know, that's basically the inning, and then there's a ball that should have been caught, and that was the inning.
and then that ended up being a game. So
it was a game, yeah, exactly. So this guy, you know, it's a really, you know, it's sometimes it's really cruel. It's a very cruel game.
Yeah, and he did pitch well. He did pitch well. Maybe that results aside might have been his best effort on the mound so far. Yep. All right. No notes. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. The question this week is from Roger in Tokyo. He sent an email and he said, just wondering what Jim and John consider the best and worst places to watch a game live. A top 3, bottom 3 perhaps. And please consider the perspective of a regular fan and not as a media member. We don't have access to the press box, etc. Jim.
Well, hey, that's hard because because the number of games I've gone to as a fan is limited to just the 4 or 5 stadiums. So let's start with the worst because people are going to care more about the best than the worst.
Okay, starting at number 3.
Yes, the third, in my opinion, the third worst ballpark to see a game at in Japan, and this is, again, only my experience, is Tokyo Dome.
Oh. My third worst is Sapporo Dome.
Okay.
And simply, you're just too far from the field as a fan. There are no seats that are really close. Plus, in the outfield seats, you can't see, because the fence is so high, you can't see if the ball is off the wall or not. You have to look at the other fans in the stadium, see how they're reacting before you know what happened.
Okay, my second worst.
Oh, you got to say why.
Oh, why?
Why Tokyo Dome is your
number? It's just sterile.
Okay, that's good enough. Second worst?
Number 2, second worst, the Dome Stadium previously known as Prince.
Oh, okay. My second worst is PayPay Dome. It's formerly known as a bunch of other names.
Yeah, I can't evaluate that because I've only seen games from the press box. Like
I did sit among the fans one time there along, well, 1999. You might remember when the Dragons played in the Japan series against the Hawks. Yeah, it's just dark and danky in there. That's why I don't like it. If they would open the roof every game, unless it was raining, I'd prefer it a lot more. But they don't, so I don't like it. And that's that. And my top...
Okay,
what? The worst one for me is Cebu Dome.
Okay.
Cebu MetLife Dome. It's hot. It's too hot.
It's too cold.
It's hotter than it is outside. It's colder than it is outside. Yet... it is kind of, it's a half dome, you know, it's
and not really... only that, what I mean, even when it was Cebu Stadium and when it got rained a lot, the stadium design, the basic layout of the seats, it's the seats are basically facing the direction they needed to be for the aisles. So if you're sitting down, if you're sitting past the third baseline, you're looking, your view is towards center field, towards the right center field wall.
Right.
You have to sort of like twist your whole body to see home, you know, to see the infield.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. I agree. But there are some sections, some areas down in the, along the lines where you're really close to the field. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Your worst stadium.
So I went Tokyo Dome and then MetLife Dome. And my worst stadium to watch a game in Japan is Sapporo Dome.
Okay.
Because it's cold and lifeless.
Cold and lifeless.
And everything's gray. The seats are gray. The fighting fans are wonderful.
You're just quoting all kinds of songs here. I don't think you know any of them, but anyway, it's all good. Yeah, you are correct.
I was not born to love Sapporo Dome. Okay.
Okay. All right, your third best stadium in Japan.
My number three is Jingu.
Jingu, okay. All right.
Jingu has a lot of faults, but the location in a park in the center of Tokyo, and I have a lot of experience there, so maybe that's it. I also, it's pretty much for me a tie between Yokohama Stadium and Jingu.
Okay. For me, third is Chiba Zozo Marine Stadium. And it's just the atmosphere and the experience. And again, some of the seats are really close to the field, so that's good. But there's kind of a lot of foul territory in that stadium as well. That's another thing that's bad about Sapporo Dome. It has so much foul territory. You're really, really so far away from the players. Yeah. It's awful.
Well, Zozo Marine Stadium gets a lot of credit. The fans add that whole experience. So I don't want I didn't really bring that into it. Okay.
All right. Your number two?
My number two is Mazda Stadium.
Oh, see, I haven't been there yet, so I can't put that on my list.
And I don't like the press seats, so I get out of them as much as possible. I've only been there.
There you go, Roger. There you go.
Get out of them as much as possible, but it's basically a quality major league stadium that's kind of been transistorized in some ways.
Nice, transistorized. Well, getting your John thing going. I like it.
It has the tunnel underneath the stadium, but it's not wide enough. Like it's not like 3 meters wide like it is in all the MLB parks, but it's like 2 meters wide. And it's got the big promenade. You can watch everything. You can walk around the ballpark. You have amazing views. It's just lovely, and it's creative.
Okay. I like Yokohama Stadium. I thought the first time I went there back in the 90s, it was really quaint. It's not too big. Most of the seats are really good. Again, you have that problem in the outfield seats with the not being able to see the wall in the outfield, but you can get over that because most of the time the ball goes over the wall anyway. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Number one.
All right. You're number one.
Koshien Stadium.
Koshien. Oh, okay.
Now, and I'll say this, I've never seen a game except in the press box, but having said that, the press box seats are pretty lousy. They're probably some of the worst seats in the stadium. So... Mm. Other than the fact that they're behind home plate, but if you took that away, they're far away. But it's, and again, the atmosphere and the grass and maybe it's the fact the first game I ever went to Koshien, the Tigers clinched their first pennant in 18 years.
Well, look at you, you good luck charm, you. Well, for me, it was your number three. It's my number one. I like Jingu Stadium because, again, you talked about the convenience. It's right there in the middle of the city. But most of the seats, I mean, there's not a bad seat in that stadium. They're all good.
Oh,
they're
all fairly Jingu as much as I.
Well, maybe you found the bad seats, but they're all fairly close. That's the thing is
you are close to the field.
You're close to the field, and so for me, I mean, look, I can basically call balls and strikes wherever I'm sitting, but. You know, I can't do it in Fukuoka Dome.
No.
Because there's some seats that are just hideous. I can't do it at Sapporo Dome. I can't do it at Tokyo Dome in those seats way, way up high behind home plate. I'm sure you've never been in there, but
I have been
in those seats. You have, yeah, I've been in those seats. You can't do anything up there except barely see the ants running around on the field. So, yeah.
Well, Jingu, to me, it does have those. You know, you go down there's a section actually down each foul line where it's been rebuilt and remodeled so many times that the stadium's a little bit like a misshapen Frankenstein's monster. And there are seats down the foul line towards the foul pole by maybe 15, 20 rows where you really can't even see home plate. You can see like the batter's head because it's kind of a dip in the seats. But
all right, well, I have yet to sit in those. Yeah.
Okay, having said that, it's a lovely park and it's just, it oozes history. So that's why they got to knock it down. Okay.
That's why they got to build a new one. It's oozing something else too, and I stepped on one.
But it is fun. It's actually, and they've cleaned it up so much. It used to be kind of dusty and rusty, but it's really a fun place to watch a ball game.
Okay, all right.
And I want to apologize to stadiums like Rock 10, where I've seen games. I haven't seen enough games in a long time that I really, you know, last time I saw they had the Erector Set emergency seats in 2013. That was the last time I saw a game there.
Yeah, that's a nice stadium. You know, I love Nagoya Dome. It's well lit. It's you know, it's a fun stadium. But again, that back wall, you got problems seeing the ball at times. And so, I mean, you know, we just gave top three and bottom three, but you know, we're not maybe disparaging some of the other parks that were not in the top three, but definitely you get a different experience with each park, and they all have their own kind of charm and personality. Mm. And the people bring a different kind of flavor to the cheering or the style of cheering that goes on there. So they're all different, but
and I might have a higher opinion of Fukuoka Dome. If like Jason Koskrew, you know, like sometimes if I went, they actually opened the roof.
Yeah. I was there one time when the roof was open for a game, and I'm telling you, it's a completely different atmosphere and environment when the roof is open. I wish they would open it all the time, but they don't. So, all right. Thank you very much, Roger. Really appreciated that. That was a fun question. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. Leave us a comment. MP3s, we love them. We don't just like them. We love them. Everybody stay safe and enjoy your baseball.
And on Thursday, July 23rd, it's going to be a national holiday in Japan. I'm going to be off. I'm going to host another live viewing event for the JBallAllen.com listeners, subscribers and members. So please join in. It will be at 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 p.m. in the afternoon, Japan time.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.